Elise Glink joins us from Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Elise, I said you would talk about interest rates a little today. Is that right?
Yeah, it's interesting, John. So the economy seems to be revving up, and analysts are raising their forecasts and really jumping it up quite a bit, thinking that the sort of the GDP for the year will end up somewhere between 3.5 and 4, which is a pretty hot time of it. But that means that the Fed is also going to keep it raising interest rates. Good for savers, not so good for people who have mortgages and are paying interest rates on credit cards.
And not so good for the U.S. government, because we're at a $2 trillion deficit for the year. And as much as I think savers might like that, that's not all good. I mean, there's a flip side to all of these good numbers, and there's a flip side to all of the bad numbers.
They are. It's a real mixed bag right now. We are not seeing the kind of, we're seeing very good growth, right? And we've had this underlying strength in people getting hired. They're making a little bit more money every time they jump jobs. So all of that is good. But on the flip side of it, to your point, there's a lot of debt that the U.S. government is carrying, and it was a whole lot cheaper to carry it at 2% interest or less than it is to carry it at 4 or 5% interest. And we saw long-term rates pop over 5% this morning, which, again, is an underlying indication that at least the bond traders out there think that the Fed is going to keep raising interest rates. And even the Fed has said they're going to raise interest rates, so it's looking more like a sure thing.
Yeah, and I don't want to be cataclysmic about this, and I'm about to get a little out over my skis, but if the federal government is borrowing money and paying it off at 2% or so, that's manageable. We all liked 2% and 3% mortgages, but if it's 5% or 6% or 7 or 8%, and it's conceivable that we could go in that direction too, then it's just so much more of our federal receipts go to simply servicing the debt. It's such an opportunity lost. So I want us to sort of keep that in mind as well.
Well, the idea behind a rising faster economy is that there's more revenue coming into Treasury. Now, the IRS said that there's something like $800 billion that was not collected, that was owed last year. But when you have a hot economy and businesses are making money and the numbers are coming in well, they should end up paying a little bit more in tax. And so you do, to your point again, you get this sort of positive-negative thing going on where, you know, more money is coming in, yet more money is going out. And so I think what the Federal Reserve is trying to do is really just dial back the economy. They're really just trying to slow things down a little bit, so that there is really a little bit more energy around stabilizing and making sure that everybody is getting what they need, but maybe not a little bit more. I know for sure that there are a lot of homebuyers out there that are not used to seeing 8% interest rates. You and I have talked about this in the past, how our early mortgages were all at, 8% or even higher. But when you've got credit card debt at the levels that we have it today, and you've got auto loans that are expensive, rising interest rates just makes it harder for everybody to achieve the financial milestones that they want to achieve in their lives.
Yeah. And I should just point out that while the economy is relatively hot right now with the tax cuts that are in place, we aren't capturing as much revenue as we would otherwise. And the idea is, yeah, but therefore that'll empower businesses. They'll hire more people. The economy will keep growing. But with interest rates where they are, less of that is happening. And so I don't want to say we're upside down, but it's not as beneficial as one would have hoped. And maybe there's a lag time on that, too. I sure hope so. We're talking to Elise Glink, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Elise spends a lot of time in the real estate sector, and I'm wondering if your friends are going to like you when you ask the question, do realtors make too much money, Elise?
Well, John, it's interesting. The question of how much a real estate agent makes and earns has been one of these things that people focus on, because it's typically like 5 or 6%. But of course, that number is not fixed, even though somebody might like you to think that, who's in the real estate business, and it's completely negotiable. But, and so over the years, we've seen discount brokerage services come in where they will offer to sell your home for a 1% listing fee, and you pay 3% to the agent that comes along with the buyer, so that would be a 4% commission. Sometimes for people who have very high-priced homes, they pay even less than that because both the buyer's agent and the seller's agent will each take a cut in the commission. And so what we're seeing now, though, is that for a lot of people, this is still a large chunk of cash that they have to pay out when, you know, you're buying or you're selling a house. And as prices have gotten so expensive, there's some concern that maybe people don't need to be spending that much. And so there's a class action federal lawsuit that Missouri home sellers have brought against the National Association of Realtors. And the case went to trial last week. And basically what they were saying is these commissions are locked in, and home buyers and sellers could save $120 billion in fees every year if they didn't have to pay such high commissions.
I guess the question is, what's fair, right? The realtor is providing a service. They have expertise, and they have the ability to sell your home. You know, you could try and do it on your own, or you could go with some 1% operation. But what if what's the average home priced at these days? Say $300,000. 6% of that is $18,000. Does the person do $18,000 worth of work, or does anybody do $18,000 worth of work when you sell your house? And so, that's the question to me.
Yeah. So, as the daughter of a realtor, my mom, Suzanne, was a top real estate agent in Chicago for decades. You know, I would say to you that the first thing that people don't understand is that the agent who represents the seller doesn't get all of that money. Half of the money goes to the buyer's agent, half goes to the seller. So in this case, the $18,000 would be divided $9,000 and $9,000. And then from there, it gets divided again because the brokerage company gets a big chunk of that as well. And so the actual agent who sells the home might get between $4,500 or maybe $6,000 or $7,000. And it sounds like a lot different than $18,000, right? And so, but even there, I think, you know, agents get paid, their commissions are 2 to 3 times as high in the U.S. as it is in, say, Australia or Canada, Ireland, the Netherlands, and the U.K. And so this is why they think that maybe there's some room to compress those commissions and put a little bit more money in the pocket of the buyers and sellers.
Well, what is the status of that lawsuit, did you say, in Missouri?
It has not been finished yet. It has just gone to trial. I don't know if it's done yet, but as soon as we get a ruling on it, we'll stay on top of it. I'll let you know what they say.
Okay, let's pick up a couple of other things. Now, we're talking to Elise Glink from Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. When's the last time you had a money date? What's a money date?
Well, it's interesting. This is a time for people to go out, couples, you know, who have been in a relationship and they co-manage their money, family, sometimes they have kids, you know, maybe they're just getting married. But this is a time for you to go out, have a good time while also talking about your financial life. And I think there's a whole sort of sub-industry that's growing up that's trying to get people to find ways to make talking about money as fun as talking about, say, oh, I don't know, Taylor Swift.
Yeah, this sounds like a way to ruin a perfectly good meal to me, but but I get it. I mean, if it's not sitting down at dinner, when's the last time you just said, okay, let's talk about where we are and not, hey, where's that utility bill? Or did you pay that thing online? I think that's a lot of our, I'm going to guess that a lot of our financial conversations are in passing. They're not comprehensive, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a time where you're setting aside a few hours, you're in a nice spot, you both feel good, and both financial advisors and relationship counselors, you know, because money is such a sticking point for most people, they say that couples who go on regular money dates can better manage their spending, saving, and investing. And, you know, when you've got money is the number one cause of divorce in this country. It is one of the, you know, financial stress around relationships is one of the top forms of financial stress that's out there. Having regular open discussions about it is a nice way to kind of bridge that gap. And so you know, some money coaches, there are financial coaches out there that coach people on how to have a money date, whether you're doing that in your house and you're lighting candles and opening a good bottle of wine, or you're picking a favorite restaurant. You need to hire a babysitter if you've got little kids because you want to keep focused on the big conversation, whatever it is. And you don't have to do the whole thing, you know, in 2 or 3 hours. But you could say, if you've got kids, okay, now we're going to talk to the back-to-school budget. Let's talk through all the expenses the kids are going to go through, the clothes they need, the books they need, the supplies, the extracurricular assistance, maybe it's sports activities. All of these things have costs associated with it. And nobody wants to be surprised. So if you sit there and you take a money date, you map out the kids, you know, extracurricular expenses for the year, that's a better way to start to get more intimate about the whole idea of spending together, saving together, and investing together.
Yeah. Although I must say that I think what would be valuable and just kind of tedious but valuable would be to take your monthly bank statement line by line and go through it. You might discover fraud. You might discover a continuing payment that you didn't know you were making, et cetera, et cetera. When's the last time we all did that, right?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I also think that, you know, it's tempting to just not talk about these things. You know, you finally get a night out, you finally get the babysitter. And I remember when my kids were little, I mean, we had so many errands that we ran. Like, we would go and eat not quite fast food, but pretty fast food so that we could get to Target and get those errands done. Or we had to go, you know, pick out gifts for people or for the holidays. You know, there's always a million things to do when you've got kids, but scheduling this regular time to talk about yourselves and your financial lives is important too. And I do want to encourage everybody to try and find some time to do it in a way that's less stressful. And that's, again, you get back to this whole idea of a date. It's up to you what that date looks like. I mean, maybe it's a nice bottle of wine and some pasta, you know, sitting at home in front of the fireplace and you pull out all your paperwork. And for other people, it's going to work better to get out of your home environment somewhere else where you can just focus on what you want to focus and there's no outside distraction.
847 says, LOL, my husband and I had one of those a week ago. I pulled out my spiral and we went over some questions I had and he had. That's a real thing. I should also say this for those of you who are real estate agents out there, and I know a few. They are probably saying to their dashboards, all of the times that we showed you a house that you didn't buy, we didn't make any money. Think about how many hours, how much effort we put in. And so when it's finally the house, hooray, but you've got to think about how much time you've paid for along the way. And our time is up. Elise, let's talk next Monday, okay?
That sounds like a plan, John. Thank you.
Talk to Jim Dahlke, the national editor at American Inno. ChicagoInno.com is where you find his stuff. And let's talk about the regional tech hubs, which I assume will include Chicago, Jim.
Hey, John. That's right. Yes, this morning the Biden administration named 31 regional tech hubs. They say hope to boost innovation across the U.S., specifically beyond the typical hotspots where we see tech and startup innovation in the Bay Area, Boston, New York City. This is really an effort to kind of bring additional resources to cities and states across the country, to bring innovation to more corners of the U.S. And that's right. So 31 projects in total across 32 states and Puerto Rico. Illinois is involved. Chicago as well. One specific program that's going to get a boost here in Chicago is quantum computing. We've written a lot about how Chicago is really kind of becoming a hub for quantum computing talent, both from what's happening at the national laboratories as well as the University of Chicago. And the group here is going to be eligible for some federal funds. So basically what's going to happen here is all these 31 groups are going to have access to up to $500 million in federal funds to boost innovation at their programs. Each group could get up to about $70 million. So this is a pretty sought-after program. About 400 applicants applied to take piece of this, and just 31 were accepted. So certainly good news here in Illinois. And look, you know, we've written a lot about how, the Bay Area has dominated tech and startup activity for decades, really. We're starting to see that change a bit as cities across the country become, their own burgeoning tech cities. But there's still work to be done, and the federal government is saying, hey, here's an opportunity to kind of spread the love around the U.S. in terms of tech innovation.
I was walking from my car to the office this morning and saw a bus that had a little sticker in the front for people of a company that were being shuttled around to maybe a conference or something. It said FabTech, and I didn't know if that was an event, but I do see the word FabTech Hub, precision fermentation and biomanufacturing in Illinois, is one of the recipients of these monies.
That's right. So that's going to be down in Champaign, Urbana. That's part of a group of, called the Illinois Fermentation Agricultural Biomanufacturing Tech Hub. And the University of Illinois is a part of that. And essentially what they're doing is they're scaling precision fermentation to convert underutilized corn feedstocks into alternative proteins, food ingredients, to just kind of utilize some of those feedstocks. So some interesting food technology happening down there. So, of course, yeah, this is not just a Chicago problem. Downstate Illinois is going to benefit potentially from this as well, as these organizations look to get part of that $500 million in federal funding.
Talk to me about WorkStorm. What's this story?
Yeah, this is a new Chicago startup on our radar. Just raised new funding at a $200 million valuation. These guys are taking on some pretty big players, namely folks like Microsoft Teams, Zoom, and Slack. They are creating a workplace collaboration platform that allows you to really kind of do, you know, everything from email to chat to video conferencing all in one place, and, you know, kind of really sort of disrupt what you're kind of typically doing in your hybrid work environment. One thing that WorkStorm says it does a little bit better or better than other companies is end-to-end encryption. So they really value privacy here, especially working with kind of healthcare and financial services. Firms that really kind of need that extra layer of privacy workforce that they're able to provide that. So we'll see, how this product continues to compete with some big names. Obviously, Microsoft Teams is a big, big player in this. Zoom, of course, as well. But Workforce says, hey, we've got everything you need kind of in one platform. So interesting new technology here from Chicago startup Workforce.
Are they a David to these Goliaths? I mean, it would just seem to me like people are so entrenched with the way they do this sort of stuff. It's hard to imagine somebody would think they could, you know, step up and take those guys on.
That's exactly right. I think David Goliath is sort of the perfect analogy here. Microsoft is a massive, massive company. And these are kind of ingrained systems, right? Like, you know, you're in your workplace, like
right.
It's going to be hard to turn your whole workforce into, you know, getting off of a program that they've been using for years, right? But, it's all about if it works better and more efficiently and, you know, beyond that, more securely.
Talk to me about the University of Chicago's Polsky Center. They have a new director there, right?
That's right. New director, the managing director at the UChicago Polsky Center is Samir Mayekar. He is the former deputy mayor for Mayor Lightfoot. He also served some time on the Obama administration as well. He's got now a very prominent role. The University of Chicago's Polsky Center plays a big role in Chicago's startup scene. They are home to the New Venture Challenge, which is a university startup competition that has birthed really some of the most notable tech companies that have come out of Chicago. You can think Grubhub, Braintree, which was acquired by PayPal, Tovala, the smart oven that we've talked about often on this program that's raising lots of funding. Big, big names in the startup scene have come out of Polsky. So the fact that Samir is behind this really is kind of an indicator that the Polsky Center is bringing another well-known name to kind of come up into the program and lead this group. And definitely be one to watch, especially as the next New Venture Challenge rolls around.
I know this isn't on the local radar, but have you had a chance to follow much the Sam Bankman-Fried trial? And I just wonder what your general thoughts were about how that thing is going.
Yeah, I mean, it's been fascinating to kind of watch the details of that fallout. FTX, of course, their U.S. headquarters was in Chicago for a time.
They
relocated to Miami, but it was sort of a little known secret there that they were kind of building their U.S. operations here in Chicago. So thrilling to see that thing kind of collapse and explode. And not exactly what the city here needs to continue its tech reputation. But it's certainly, one to watch. The entire crypto space, certainly keeping an eye on that to see, how that continues to develop. But that was certainly not what a reeling cryptocurrency industry needs, is continued turmoil.
But crypto isn't going away, right? Like, it's still out there, right? And if the maybe values of some of those cryptocurrencies is less than it was, it's not dead in the water, is it?
No, it's absolutely not dead in the water. The fundamental technology, I think, will still be a major piece of our financial system going forward. I think what we ended up doing through some of this is sort of weed out the bad actors, FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried kind of being one of them. But the fundamental technology of cryptocurrency is going to still be plenty of utilization across the U.S. And, you know, I think we got rid of some of the craziness during the boom times, and what we're going to be left with is some technology that still really works and is still really useful, and crypto is going to have a place in the U.S. for years to come.
Jim Dahlke's the national editor at American Inno. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, John.
Okay, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. We've got more business news today with Dave Schwann.
It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A report from the RSM U.S. Middle Market Business Index shows rising real estate interest rates are pushing up the cost of commercial industrial loans. That makes it harder for mid-market businesses to meet payrolls and finance expansion. An economist with RSM says that's leading to a greater sense of risk in the middle market and the economy. The United Auto Workers strike has expanded to a Stellantis plant in Sterling Heights, Michigan, outside Detroit. 6,800 members walked out this morning. This after UAW President Sean Fain had reported some progress in talks with Stellantis and General Motors. Aldi supermarkets are promising big savings for the upcoming holiday season. The chain says you'll see price reductions of up to 50% across the store starting November 1st, running through the holiday season. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Time for the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And can you imagine how terrifying it is to stand up in front of the judges at one of those Shark Tank type of things and pitch your business?
Yes. It was somewhat terrifying coming in, but nevertheless, we did it.
Yes, he did. His name is Rodney Trussell, and more about him after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, last Thursday night, the IJ Clinic, the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship, held its Shark Tank-like event.
Welcome to the 10th annual Southside Pitch.
And here's how Rodney Trussell began his.
This is too much. I didn't plan for all this. I can't do this. This is too much. It's too much.
And the crowd fell silent. A few shouts of encouragement.
Speak from your heart.
But Rodney was playing, and playing well, to the judges and crowd. To make a point.
Those are the words that you will hear from every entrepreneur who owns a business on the south side of Chicago.
He got their attention.
Yeah, well, that was the point, you know. And I want to be a little bit different and unique.
His pitch worked. Over $15,000 for the night, which he's going to plow back into the shared use commercial kitchen, the first one in that community on the south side.
841 West 103rd Street in Chicago.
What neighborhood is that?
Roseland/Washington Heights.
Rodney, with more than 20 years in the restaurant business, opened Our City Kitchen more than 6 months ago, and he hopes it can be a springboard for chefs and caterers and bakers and others who are looking to grow their business.
They can rent the kitchen space out by the hour. We supply it all. I mean, from the small wares to the ovens, all that. So you bring your butter, bring your sauce, bring your flour, then you can get there and rock and roll.
And in the first half year of business, Our City Kitchen has been hopping.
So we are already helping out 30 businesses, and we also have 13 or 14 folks now just waiting to get in the kitchen.
Rodney Trussell, founder and owner of Our City Kitchen. And Rodney, how can people reach you if they have a recipe that they think the world will buy?
Sure enough. So please email us at info@rcitykitchens.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram.
And the first place goes Our City Kitchen.
Has winning sunk in yet, Rodney?
No, I still think I'm dreaming.
On the food calendar, it's National Boston Cream Pie Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Cortland Hickey is the general manager of Chicago Costume. It's time to catch up on what's hot and what's not. Cortland, welcome back. How are you?
John, how you doing? Thank you for having me.
How's business this year?
You know, it's a little slow, to be honest with you. As far as people walking in, it's a little quieter than we're used to as we get closer to Halloween. But hopefully that changes by the end of this week.
Yeah, no kidding. This would be the week. But, I mean, the industry for Halloween is doing pretty well. Candy and yard decorations as well.
Sure. Sure, you know, when it comes to big box stores, but, you know, we're a specialty retailer, so we're very specific to costumes and what people are looking for. So there's a lot of competition out there from the internet and, again, you know, like Walmart, Target, things like that.
So what are some of the specific things you do? What have you got there that is of interest to people?
Well, we have a lot of Barbie costumes. Barbie and Ken definitely is the biggest trend this year.
Right. And what does that look like? What's the Barbie and Ken costume? We saw her in a bunch of outfits and him in some. What do you sell when you do that?
Well, there's their beach gear. There's their Western wear outfits that they have matching complimentary outfits.
Right.
There's their roller skating outfits as well. There's quite a few different fun little you know, either as couples costumes or, you know, Barbie herself has just tons of different looks.
I was going to guess Taylor Swift outfits would be popular this year. Maybe, and then get somebody a Kansas City Chiefs jersey as well. Is that a popular setup?
You know, that's a little more recent, I would say. If you're looking for a football thing, you know, we're selling 1980s vintage Ditka sweater vests. A lot more interest in that kind of stuff here in Chicago, I would say.
Than Taylor Swift. What else is popular in your store this year?
Well, Ninja Turtles. There was a new movie that came out this summer, and it has been very popular. Sort of a vintage resurgence of interest in Ninja Turtles, and the movie Megan, which is about a robot killer doll, very popular. That's and also the Scream movie, Scream masks. There's, I don't know, 20 or 30 different kinds of Scream masks and outfits that go along with them. So those have been really very popular recently in the last week or so.
Is there something that every year is there? I don't know if it's Frankenstein or something from a movie, but, and maybe you've already touched on that, but is there just pretty much an annual costume or setup that you know people are going to want?
Well, yeah, I mean, this just today they started getting hazmat suits, which is always like a last-minute outfit. It's pretty popular, you know, the yellow outfit with a little thick respirator. Ninjas, priests, and nuns, that's always, you know, right up there with the most popular outfit that people get.
Have we gotten away from the sexy nurse, the sexy school teacher, all of that stuff?
Absolutely. You know, that trend is definitely over as far as like a mainstream trend. Obviously, some people will always want to dress, you know, on the more scandalous side, but it got kind of cold here. It's supposed to be 40 degrees on Halloween next week, so it'll be a little tough to pull off one of those outfits, you know, right now. But as far as the trend, absolutely, it's definitely fallen off.
It's not as PC, I guess, anymore. I'm trying to think of some of the superheroes that, you know, Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, that sort of thing, and which are the warmest, but all of them are probably skin-tight outfits, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's, for the guys, there's like, you know, superheroes that are muscle-chested superheroes. Those are all pretty popular this year. But yeah, the Spider-Man, there's, I don't know, 15, 20 different kinds of Spider-Mans. If you've seen all the movies and the TV shows, there's quite a few options for that as well.
I'm a little surprised to hear you say Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, that's 40 years ago, right?
Well, there was a new movie that came out this summer. I saw it with my kids. It was actually quite good. You know, it fits, you know, it's a good outfit. There's a lot of accessories, you know, people know what you are, you know, that's always a big thing for Halloween. You want everybody to know exactly what you are. You don't want them to be guessing.
Yeah, I guess so. And then are Disney characters, or is that proprietary? You can't do, I don't know, what is that, Snow White or whatever?
Snow White is in the public domain, if there's a lot of different Snow Whites out there. But, yeah, Disney characters definitely popular. We had a few early interest in, you know, Nemo and Dory. We carry a lot of licensed costumes as well. But, yeah, I mean, there's sort of general Disney characters. You know, I would say witches are more popular this year than princesses, if I had to pick between the two.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so you've got two stores. Do I read that correctly, Cortland?
That's correct, yes. Our main year-round location at 1120 West Fullerton, right across from DePaul University, and our warehouse/retail store on 4727 West Montrose at Montrose and Cicero in Portage Park.
Pick out the costume or create one that you like at chicagocostume.com. They've been helpful to us in the past, that's for sure. Cortland, it's nice to talk to you. Have a great season.
Thank you so much, John. You have a great day.